This is a FUBAR Radio podcast. Go to FUBARradio.com for more details. Access all areas on FUBAR Radio.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to Access All Areas with me, Stephen Leng, and unfortunately, my co-host Lizzie is unable to attend tonight's show. But there you hear the voice of my new co-host, who knows the show inside out. Isn't that right, Lizzie?
I certainly do.
Now, I did not say Lizzie, did I?
You didn't. You did well.
Do you care to explain who you are?
Well, my name's Lizzie. I am Stephen's producer. And most of the time I sit behind the glass and write rude words to him on the screen.
That's true.
And this week I'm going to be attempting celebrity gossip.
Ah, Not your forte.
Not my strong point, I wouldn't say. But you know, first time for everything.
I think you've got some things down. You're not totally clueless.
Well, I've been producing this show for a few months.
Exactly. So you know a lot about, you know, former members of Atomic Kitten and the Nigel Farage.
Yes, exactly. Very funny, actually. I was calling my granddad the other day.
Okay.
Granddad Harvey. And he was next to Michelle Heaton on my phone book, which was making me laugh. And also quite close to Harriet Harman, MP.
Oh, okay. Has she been on the show?
She's just the array of guests we have here at FUBAR.
Yes, you have. I mean, you produce a lot of the shows here, right?
Yeah, slightly different to Access All Areas.
Yeah, Access All Areas. We like to keep it, you know, fairly chill. Have a little chat with some celeb pals and play some good pop music.
Exactly.
I mean, the other shows just aren't as good as this. That's all I'm saying. We have a very busy show.
Goodness, don't we?
We really do. So I'm glad you're here along for the ride, Lissy. Oh, my God. So I'm going to keep doing this.
Shall I just have a little banner on my forehead?
Please. Liss. I sound like I've got a lisp. Lissy. First up, I've just met him outside. Lovely guy. Actually rather handsome, rather dashing. Richard Shelton, here to talk about his show Sinatra and Me.
I'm excited.
Are you a Sinatra fan?
Well, I've been listening to some of Richard's music while I was preparing the show for you, Stephen.
Uh-huh.
What a voice!
Right?
I'm excited. Do you think we could convince him to do a little rendition
now,
in the studio?
This is something that Lizzie is a fan of.
Yes.
I am not a fan of the live in-studio singing.
Why ever not?
I mean, it doesn't matter how good they are. I can't... Remember when we had that band Alien Uncovered in?
Mm-hmm.
And it just makes me... I just... No.
Okay, but the difference between Alien Uncovered and Richard Shelton is probably the fact that they're all... It's quite a different style of
yes,
music.
Yes, I agree with you on that. That's probably true in that... Nothing. So, yeah, we've got him at first, 10 past six, and then 6:30 we have David Bull in the studio. Mm-hmm. In the studio, that's correct.
Yes.
From Coast versus Country. I am more of a coast guy myself. What about you?
I would say I'm probably with you on that one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I like to have the beach. I grew up along the beach in Hampshire. It's always been in my life, apart from when I've lived in London. The closest I get is the Regent's Canal.
Exactly. Pop by the Thames and just hope for the best.
Not quite the same.
No, it's not.
Then we also have the gorgeous Mika Paris on the phone and Suzanne Shaw from Hearsay.
Oh my goodness.
I'm dead excited about
that. Me too.
I don't know if we've got any Hearsay on the playlist. I'm hoping that we do. We do. Maybe we won't play that to her because I'm sure, you know, it's a long time ago for her.
How many times do you think she's heard Pure and Simple played to her in her life?
And she has to just sing along and like do the moves. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so we won't do that to her. But she is here to talk about hashtag Dressed by Kids, which is a new campaign by Oxfam. So that's very exciting. Should we have a little bit of showbiz gossip, though? Because we were just talking about this before I came in, and I think it's some breaking news. Pippa Middleton has gone jogging in Australia.
Yeah, it is. It is actually at the top of some of the news websites as their main story this afternoon.
Yeah, so for those that don't know, she just got married to Spencer Matthews' brother, whose name escapes me.
James,
well done.
Thank you. Been
James
practicing.
Matthews. And they are currently honeymooning in Sydney, in Australia. And there's been lots of pap attention. You know, they've been courting, lots of sightseeing, etc. And today they went for a jog, and seems to be the biggest news the country has ever seen.
I mean, besides the fact that there was a big old election debate last night, you know, lots of current affairs going around. But no, they have been for a little run. And that's lovely. I'm glad that she's staying fit and healthy and he's, you know, keeping up
supporting
his exercise
her.
Routine. Yeah.
I think it's a bit of a funny old world we live in. But people are interested. Pippa Middleton gets people's attention even though she's never said or done anything, really, of note.
No.
Other than being someone famous's sister.
Yes.
And now she's married to someone famous's brother.
Yeah, do you think she minds?
What, the attention?
So much attention.
I think that she enjoys it, yes, because if you were as rich as they are, and remember, they're not royal, but they are still very rich, you don't need to stay in the penthouse of a admittedly very lovely hotel in central Sydney with a view of the Harbour Bridge. There are plenty of gorgeous hotels you can go and stay in that are not in the centre of a very big city. So she either understands it and doesn't care, or she enjoys it. And I don't know. I'm somewhere between the two, is what I think.
So what you're saying is if she didn't enjoy it, she would perhaps go somewhere more remote.
Yeah.
With less
attention. You could even go in Sydney, but you just wouldn't be... You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You wouldn't need to be in the centre. And there are, I'm sure there's plenty of other hotels that also look over the Harbour Bridge and the Opera House. Just maybe not right there. I don't know. I'm intrigued by why people are intrigued by her. But they are.
So. They are. They love her.
But you mentioned something else which I wanted to bring up briefly.
Oh, yes.
The election debate last night.
Uh-huh.
Now, you know I'm a big fan of talking about politics.
Yes.
I am a lefty Liberal Guardian reader.
That is
my vibe. Unlike Lizzie Cundy, who is...
No, stop it.
Not that. And last night, all of the leaders, nearly all of the leaders, five of the seven leaders of the main parties in the UK did a debate. And it was a bit of a free-for-all, really. Obviously, Theresa May did not turn up, neither did Nicola Sturgeon. But it was an interesting thing that went on, and I think it didn't actually work out so well for poor Amber Rudd, who, it was revealed afterward, had actually lost her father on Monday.
Oh, my goodness. That's not what you want to be doing.
No.
3 days after.
Theresa May didn't do it. I mean, still kind of made her do it. I don't know. Whatever. Makes me feel a little bit uncomfortable, to be honest. But I was very impressed with Jeremy Corbyn's performance.
I was going to say, who do you think came across well?
Well, I have to, you know, front load this with the fact that I am a paid up member of the Liberal Democrats. But having said that, I do think that...
Go back. Lizzie gives you so much flack for your Corbyn love, and
yeah,
you're a paid-up member of the Lib Dems.
I know, and I keep telling her this, and she...
I didn't know that,
Stephen. I'm not a particularly big Corbyn lover, but in this circumstance, I would much rather Corbyn be the Prime Minister than Theresa May.
Yes.
So I think it was quite interesting that he turned up and she didn't, and then managed to do a fairly good performance.
What about your main man, Tim Farron? He's got quite the speechwriter, hasn't he?
He did that little joke about Bake Off at the end. That was good. I think he's getting somewhat lost now that there feels much more like a two horse race.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I don't think that's necessarily good for democracy. But there you go. We live in the democratic system that we do live in. I was also really impressed by Caroline Lucas, the co-leader of the Green Party, who I thought did an incredible job putting forward her points really intelligently, but without seeming to... what's the word? She wasn't too big for her boots. Like, she kind of understood where the Green Party's place is. She wasn't trying to... I don't know. I just
Do you think there are any parallels with how Nicola Sturgeon came across 2 years ago when everyone was like, no shit, look at the SNPs?
Yeah, totally. I think these women on the left, these intelligent women on the left, really have something to say for themselves. And I think it's a shame that the two biggest parties on the left have been only ever represented by men as their leaders. It's interesting times. This time, when we do the show next week, I think the vote will be on.
Yeah.
So I'll have to go
No,
I'll probably do it before.
Oh, will you?
Maybe,
okay.
Yeah.
Well, I start late on a Thursday, so I think I'm going to have a jaunt down there on Thursday morning.
Gorgeous.
To the polling station.
What's your local...
I think it's called Finchley and Golders Green.
Is
that the title?
Yes, I think you might be right.
Mm-hmm.
I'm Shoreditch and Hackney South.
Nice.
Which is solid Labour.
Oh, I'm jealous. Mine's pretty much solid Conservative.
Tory, yeah.
I mean, it's fine though, because I'm still going to pop out there and...
Still got to do your civic duty.
Do my thing.
Right.
I've actually put a nice little song on the playlist for you. I don't know if you've heard this one.
No.
But we played it yesterday on one of the shows.
Oh,
and
is
it's
this Liar
Booming
Liar?
Fantastic.
Okay, yes, I have heard about this. Shall we play that and then should we get our first guest Richard in?
Yeah? Let's invite Richard into the studio.
Great.
Thank you. We have a mission to make Britain a country that works, not for the privileged and not for the few, but for every one of our citizens. And together, we, the Conservative Party, can build a better Britain.
She's a liar, liar. She's a liar, liar. No, you can't trust her. No, 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 no. She's a liar, liar. She's a liar, liar. No, you can't trust her. No, 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 no. We all know politicians like telling lies. Big ones, little ones, porcupines. Saying they're strong and stable, won't disguise. We're still being taken for a ride. The nurses going hungry, schools in decline. I don't recognize this broken country of mine. They're having a laugh, they show them the door. Then cut the rich, not the poor.
I've been very clear that I think we need that period of time, that stability, to be able to deal with the issues that the country is facing. I'm not going to be calling a snap election.
She's a liar, liar. She's a liar, liar.
Future generations look back at this time. They will judge us not only by the decision that we made, but by what we made of that decision. They will see that we shaped them a brighter future. They will know that we built them a better Britain.
She's a liar, liar. She's a liar, liar.
Catchy tune. That was not what I was expecting at all.
So you've heard about this song?
Yeah, it's to do with Theresa May.
Yes, and it's all gone a bit crazy. I saw
isn't
it
going to be number one
the charts? Yeah,
yeah.
And it's a bit bonkers,
it's gonna
isn't
knock
it?
Ed Sheeran off the charts. Who knew?
Who would have thought it? A nice little ska track.
Is that what it is? I don't even know what the genre of music that is. Fabulous. But we do have someone that knows his music very well in the studio right now. Richard,
yes.
How are you?
Hello, I'm very well.
What a smooth voice.
Oh, what a voice.
What a smooth voice.
I'm hot. No, I mean, I'm really hot. It's hot in
We've
London.
We've even got the aircon on.
I know, that's nice, actually.
So we were just talking outside. You've actually come fresh from LA and Italy, and you actually say it's worse here than
it's
it.
Hotter here. It's a lot hotter here than LA, and it's a lot hotter here than Italy. I'm kind of getting
knew?
A bit, you know, I'm getting a bit bit warm.
Well, we'll try and not keep you for too long then, so you can get to the pub and get a pint for yourselves. How are you?
Very well. Great to be here. Thank
and
you.
We're just reading up about what you're up to at the
yes.
minute. You've got a big show coming up.
I have, yes.
At one of my favourite venues in London, actually.
The Crazy Cocks at
yeah.
Brasserie Zidane.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's, should I tell you what it is?
Go ahead.
It's it's on Monday in Tuesday next week, the 5th and 6th of June, and I'd played Frank Sinatra in a very big drama, so this show, it's called Sinatra and Me, and I have a lot of really inexplicable, strange synchronicities and serendipities between my life and Frank Sinatra. So I talk about those, and I perform the music, and I have a very, very, very special guest with me in the show, which is very exciting.
Can you tell us who?
Well, I can tell you what. It's actually Frank Sinatra's very own Tuxedo.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Where did you get that from?
I got it in LA. I mean, I'd recorded in Capitol Records. And, I was at an industry, music industry party at the British Consul, actually.
Oh, yeah.
And I got talking to a woman who was standing next to me, and she said, hi, I'm Heidi, I'm a TV producer. I'm working on a reality show. We've just gotten Frank Sinatra's Tuxedo, and we're looking for a home for it. I look no further, madam. So it walked into my life, literally.
Amazing. That's, I mean, I don't. Those things don't happen every day.
But you know what? I mean, they don't. And also because I've got a big association with Frank Sinatra.
Yeah.
But recently, it's poignant in the sense that I did the Alan Titchmar show on TV maybe a year and a half ago. And a fellow guest was Roger Moore, Bond, you know? And He looked at me backstage and he said, who are you and why are you here? And I raised his eyebrow and I laughed and I said, well, I'm doing a Frank Sinatra concert at the Cadogan Hall. And in fact, this is Frank Sinatra's Tuxedo. And he said, open up the pocket, open up the jacket. So I did. And he said, oh, yeah, Cyril Castle, that was Frank's. Frank called me and said, Roger, where'd you get your tuxedo? And I told him to go to Cyril Cole. I can absolutely tell you that's Frank Sinatra. So I'm standing there. James Bond is telling me I'm wearing Frank Sinatra stuff.
That is absolutely crazy. Do you know what? I was actually watching something interesting about Frank Sinatra just yesterday. And it was the TV series Feud. Between Betty Davis Joan Crawford.
Yeah.
And Frank Sinatra briefly appears as a character in one of them because... The director was filming a film with him.
Yes.
At the just after they'd filmed Whatever Happened to Baby Jane. Mm. He looked like and sounded like a nightmare to work with.
Right. He could be.
Yes, that was the thing. I think because he was such a big star at that point, wasn't he? Yeah. He could basically do and say whatever he wanted.
Well, I think you know, because I'd played him in a drama as an actor, you know what I mean? I really had to get him under my skin, as it were. You discover that the essence of Frank Sinatra was that he was about 95% charm and 5% danger. And if you can capture that danger, you know, there was always that you never knew quite what might happen.
Yeah.
And it could happen.
Yeah,
like
yeah.
That. So, yeah, but what a fabulous...
What initially sparked your interest in him?
I mean, it's a really weird story, but I was six when I saw a photograph of the boy, Frank Sinatra, and I said to my mum, you know, Mummy, who is this? Frank Sinatra, he looks like me. And she said, my God, he does. And then, you know, so I was, even from a tiny age, I was aware of this name, this man. My dad then bought the My Way, you know, album, the cassette back in the 60s, early 70s. And even as a kid, I got the music. I just knew. I inhabited the music. Mm-hmm. But then I was gifted a book, Rat Pack Confidential, by my flatmate, Helen. And a year later, I was starring as Frank Sinatra in the adaptation of that book in the West End. So it was these strange serendipities keep falling into my life and have done for years and years and years.
Yeah.
I can't imagine life without him now.
Well, that sounds quite sweet, to be honest. Quite adorable. What can we expect from your show? Did you say Monday, Tuesday?
It's Monday, Tuesday at 9:15. What you can expect, an hour of... the show is about... Basically, I went to live in America. Oh, excuse me. About 5 years ago. I'd always wanted to go and live there. And my motto is, if you want to do something in this life, do it, you know? Mm-hmm. Don't wait for permission from somebody else. Have a conviction with your own desires. If you've got the ability and the tenacity to do something, do it. So I went to the States. I was 50 when I went to America. And I didn't know anybody there. I just thought, I'm going to try this, you know? I went with my cap and I threw it in the ring and I thought, here goes. The show is about that experience, about the people I've met and worked with. I've worked with all his living musicians, recorded with them. I've met members of his family.
Wow.
I've met people who worked with him, who knew him intimately, shall we say.
Got him.
and the music, you know, I'm now gigging the music out there with young musicians who are into that kind of sound. So whilst we might be, let's say, doing Come Fly With Me or Fly Me to the Moon or Wee Small Hours of the Morning, you know that song?
Yes, yeah.
Please in the wee small hours of the morning.
Very
while
good.
The whole wide world is fast asleep. He loves it, really.
I mean, you do have a very good voice, so it's not painful to listen to, you know.
You should see the colour of Stephen's face right now. He's not enjoying this, Richard.
But it's about that music. It's about the experiences that have come through my life. It's about taking off my... I literally take off my suit and put on the tuxedo to sing... I've got you under my skin, and it's all in within the hour. It's an action-packed hour of song and hope, of encouraging people to live their dreams and sending them away happy, I hope.
Well, yes, it's always the bonus at the end of a gig if you're happy.
Yeah, always. Yeah.
You were actually, when we were talking earlier, you mentioned you used to be in Emmerdale, didn't you?
I did used to be in Emmerdale.
That was a long time ago.
Yeah, about 10 years ago.
And
yes.
You had a big storyline with Lorraine Chase.
I did.
Is that right? What was she like?
Ah, she's fabulous. She was my wife. I mean, we played two very dark characters. Mm-hmm. She was Steph Stokes and I was Dr. Adam Forsyth. And we were both murderers. and we both...
As so often happens in that tiny village.
Tiny village. Full of bodies. But we had such fun together, Lorraine and I. She's such a character, you know. She's tremendous. And you know what? It was a dark old storyline. A lot of it was quite dark and sinister. But we laughed. We laughed and laughed and laughed. So I adored working with her. And, you know, we're very close friends.
Oh, that's good.
Very, to this day. She's been to stay with me in America. And she's coming to the show. She's coming on Monday or Tuesday. Yeah, so.
Awesome.
Tremendous.
Do you have good memories of your time there? Because I know that soap can be a relentless beast.
You know, it's the strangest thing, you know, when you go into a soap or you know, I used to hear people who were interviewed about what it's like on a soap, and they used to say how, you know, it's hard work. And I used to think, well, what can be so hard about learning lines and, you know, having a job on television? It's really hard.
Really?
It's really tiring because you're constantly learning words and scenes and then having to act them. And it's, you know, you can get... pages and pages of this dialogue that you have to, you can't just, you know, digest it. You've got to act, you've got to tell the story. Mm-hmm. So lots of strange hours, you know, you can be on set at 7 a.m., you can finish at 7 p.m., and then you're back on the next day. So it is actually quite physically tiring, but it's also, you know, it's tremendous to be part of something. It's an honour to be part of something like that.
Yeah, it's a British institution, isn't
really,
it?
It really is.
I have to say, I dipped out of it for the last couple of years.
Oh, yeah.
But it's suddenly doing really well again, isn't it?
Well, yeah, didn't it win a BAFTA?
It did win a BAFTA, yeah, which was, I think, everyone was really pleased by, because they've really upped the level of what they're doing recently.
Yes, yes.
Do you ever watch it anymore? Is it?
Well, no,
I guess you can't.
I can't in America. I can't. I don't know what's going on. I've lost track of it. But
I can tell you there is murder. There is death. There is marriage. There is cheating.
Marvellous stuff.
Same old. Mm. So how long are you going to be staying in the UK for?
So this time I'm here until Wednesday. Do the shows Monday, Tuesday, and then go back to America on Wednesday to do some more recording. I've just finished a film, so we have to do some post-production on that.
Amazing. Anything you can talk about?
Yeah, well, yes. I mean, curious. I don't actually know what the film is about, because you get your scene.
Oh, so you don't know the whole film.
No,
right, I
haven't been sent the whole script. But I play this, you know, I auditioned for it on self-tape as a kind of New York American, about here, I think, I don't know. And when it came to doing it, you know, I said to the director, you know, I'm British, in case you're wondering, when I turn up and say hello, you know, you're not freaked.
you're not forcing it, yeah.
And he said, no, I know. Could you maybe do like a British thing? I said, well, what British thing? So I put him about here, you know, he's a trickster, and he's all, come on, look at her over there, Beyonce with them pretty eyes. Come over here, darling, come on. You know, he's one of those characters.
Right, okay.
But I play this, you know, the shell trick where people put a bean or a coin under three, like, egg cup thing, and they shuffle them around, and you bet a dollar.
You're a con artist.
I'm a con artist. Again. Play a lot of villains. So,
why do you think that is?
Because I'm a horrible person.
So yeah,
your personality says otherwise. Do you enjoy that side of it?
I love it because, I mean, it's permission. I mean, I really do. So I'm quite serious. I get to play a lot of villains. I seem to have a gift for playing people who are charming and yet who are dark and a little bit frightening. So it's a type of person that you can play. You know, you can't be like that in your everyday life.
Some people are.
They are, aren't they? It's frightening. So no, I like to have my natural character. You know, personalities. You know, I like to have a laugh, and I'm plainly not a murderer
that we know of.
No.
Behind that smooth voice.
I'll sing you to death.
I'll jump out the window. Not because of your voice. Not because of your voice, I should add. Okay. We've actually got one of your songs lined up to play.
Ah.
So I want to say thank you very much for coming
in. Well, thank you. It's been fun.
We can get tickets, I guess, on the...
On the Brasserie Zadel website.
Great.
Yeah, and it would be lovely to see you there. Yeah, Monday, Tuesday, 9:15.
Great. Thank you very much for coming in.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
An Englishman won't talk about his feelings. He'd rather be discreet, remain aloof. And even if you send his senses reeling, he'll find it hard to offer verbal proof. Because I'm a Brit, I will sit on the fence instead of making my intentions clear. But now I'm here in LA, I know just what to say, my dear. Let me be Frank, or Sammy, or Joe. I will sing you every little thing that I want you to know. I'm a bit dizzy, Louis or Miles. I wanna go blow that horn when I see your beautiful smile. You can be Ginger, baby, I gotta stare. I'll come sliding down the banister and swing you in the air. We will go dancing among the stars, the ones that shine beneath our feet on Hollywood Boulevard. I knew the lady for me would be fashionably late, but you're the one that I've been waiting for. And every time I see your smile, it makes me love you more. I was a coward, ran out of words. Now I'm drinking dry martinis, and they're shaken, not stirred. License to love, and here to stay. I'm an Englishman in love, in L.A. I see your smile, it makes me love you more and more and more. I was a coward, ran out of words. Now I'm drinking dry martinis, and they're shaken, not stirred. License to love, and here to stay. I'm an Englishman in love. sign above that I'm an Englishman in love in L.A.
Welcome to the studio. You've started something called Rise Up.
I have, yeah. We're just trying to reach out to young people in the UK and trying to get them to register. Only 40% of young people are voting right now.
Why do you think young people need to vote?
A lot of the policies that are happening at the moment, they're kind of favouring the people that do vote. They're not treating young people very well in this country, and it's because they don't vote. So if you ain't making yourself heard, then whoever's in power ain't going to take any notice of you.
Every Monday,
Sarah Love and My Sticky.
From 4 p.m.
FUBAR Radio.
I've been hearing symphonies before all I heard was silence. A rhapsody for you and me, and every melody is timeless. Life was stringing me along. Then you came and you cut me loose. Was solo singing on my own. Now I can't find a key without you. And now your song is on repeat. And I'm dancing on to your heartbeat. And when you're gone,
I do love that song.
Me too.
I feel it's given me like all the summer vibes.
Totally. It's going to be like the song of 2017.
Do you think?
Oh, yes.
Oh, yeah.
Are we going to look back at this summer and think, oh, yeah, sweaty FUBAR studio?
I've been thinking that since the last summer when I was coming doing the show. Thankfully, the aircon is a bit better now.
than we've it was upgraded
a little bit. Speaking of music, and you know, that wasn't what we were speaking about, but I'm going to go with it anyway. There is a big show on this weekend, isn't there?
There certainly is. Yeah.
One Love Manchester gig.
I guess we haven't really spoken about that because it happened on Monday last week.
Yeah,
we didn't have a show last week, so yeah. This is the first kind of opportunity I guess you've had to talk about the terrorist attack at the Ariana Grande gig.
Yeah, it was. It was obviously a really horrific event, and I woke up on the Tuesday morning to read about it. And straight away, funny enough, I was on Twitter and noticed that one of the guys who they were saying was missing at the time was someone I followed and followed me, and I'd actually had quite a lot of conversations with on Twitter over the years. Yeah, Martin Hett, who has kind of become... he's the one everyone's talking about, so... A couple of days later, it was revealed he was one of the 22 people killed, which is obviously horrific.
Goodness. What kind of interaction, in what capacity had you spoken to him on Twitter?
He was a PR that worked up north, and he would constantly post really funny videos and clips he'd made. Mm-hmm. We used to talk about pop culture stuff. There's a bit of a gay Twitter, British gay Twitter mafia. Everyone knows everyone. It's quite an odd thing to say, but it's true. And Martin was one of those people that you always knew would tweet something hilarious in reaction to a TV show, was really creative and funny. So that was obviously really sad. And I didn't know him personally, so it's not like I was involved. But it was an odd thing to experience for the first time, knowing... of someone, even just even that remotely, that had been killed, really in such an event. And now a friend of mine, Philip Norman, who's a fashion designer, has made a T-shirt in his honour, with his face on, and they've made it look like a theatre show, and it's been selling out. It's been doing really well, and you know, horrific event, but hopefully. This weekend there can be some joy had by those people that experienced that horrific event at the One Love concert in Manchester. So it's quite an impressive lineup. Have you seen it?
I have had a look. And one of the questions I wanted to ask was the people who were at the Ariana Grande gig, are they automatically...
Yes. So anyone that had a ticket for that night is invited. I saw someone on the news say that they were obviously scared because... the event happened at a big concert. This is going to be a big concert. Mm-hmm. I imagine the security around this is going to be, you know, tenfold.
It's just going to be next level, isn't it?
Yeah. And obviously, there's a lot of big stars coming. So you've got Ariana Grande, Katy Perry, Take That, who are rumoured to be reuniting with Robbie Williams for the event. Usher. It's just a big cacophony of incredible music stars. So it should be an incredible gig, and it's going to be televised on Sunday night. So for those of us that don't get to go, it will be well worth a watch.
Wow, it seems like one of those gigs that we'll look back at, you know, kind of Bob Geldof style.
A Live 8 style thing, yeah. It's obviously, I think most people, you know, it's sad to say, but terrorist attacks have become more commonplace over the years, and people are a bit more immune to the worst of them. This hit home because there were so many children and young people. It was a targeted attack on children and young people. And that hurts people more. So I really hope that it goes off well, and people of Manchester can get back on their feet after such a horrific event, really.
Mm-hmm. Well, the word vulnerable was bandied around quite a lot last week, mm-hmm. you know, with, like you say, with young people. And I guess it's important for those people to not be seen as vulnerable, to actually to be seen loving life and enjoying themselves and doing what, you know, kids and teenagers do best.
Which yeah,
is just
totally.
Have a nice time.
Yeah, I think it's definitely going to be, like you said, one of those big memorable gigs.
Mm-hmm, that, definitely.
What do you make of the rumours that Robbie and Take That are going to reunite?
Oh my goodness. If that were to happen, I feel like that's monumental, because I was asking you earlier, is it all a take that? And what did you say?
Well, no. All but one. There's minus one, and I can't remember if it's Jason or Howard, but I think it's Jason Orange.
Well, as long as, you know, Gary and Kazza and old Robbie are on the stage together, that would be quite monumental, wouldn't it? It would be an exciting event. And why not? Why shouldn't they? If they're going to reunite for anything, perhaps this is it.
Yeah, I think you're probably right. And yeah, they have done it on stage before. They ask friends. It's not like it would be a big call for them to just, you know, I'm sure they can rehearse a quick song.
Come on, guys. You know, take one for the team.
Take one for the team, exactly. So I believe we have our next guest ready to go. So shall we play a little song? Should we play a little Ariana Grande?
Oh, yeah, go on then. Shall I think we? That's appropriate, isn't
Good.
It?
I'm glad.
I'm so into you, I can barely breathe. And all I wanna do is to fall in deep. But close ain't close enough till we cross the line. So name my game to play and I'll roll a dice. Hey, oh baby, look what you started. The temperature's rising and here is this gonna happen. Been waiting and waiting for you to make a move before I make a move. So baby, come light me up and baby, I'll let you on.
Well, that was, I caught myself out then, didn't I? Because you've moved. I wasn't sure which mic to put up.
You've done marvellously well.
Oh, thank God for that. David.
Hello.
How are you?
I'm delicious, thank you. How are you?
Good terminology, I like that.
Oh, thank you very much.
Now, you've had a bit of a long day, haven't you?
Well, you know, as days go. Yeah, I started at 4:45 this morning, sorted out correspondence from Los Angeles, where I used to live, very right. showbizly. Weirdly, actually, I know Ariana's brother.
That's, Frankie.
Yeah, Frankie, that's how showbiz I am. And and then from there, I then do all the papers, went to do the right stuff on yep. Channel 5 this morning, which started at 9:15. Apparently, I argued with Matthew for a great deal of time. Nothing new there.
Yeah, that doesn't surprise me.
No, and then went to the Chinese embassy to get a visa because I'm off to Shanghai, where I'm hosting a massive pharmaceutical convention called CPHI, which is amazing, actually, where all the new drugs are shown from around the world. And then what did I do next? Oh yes, and then I went to try to complete on purchasing a car, and then I got served notice on an apartment that I'm buying, and then I thought, oh crikey, I need to be here. And then I leapt on an incredibly sweaty tube, and I arrived here quite moist.
And wow. What have you done today, Stephen?
Definitely not as much as that, I have
and
to
it,
say.
And I do it all again tomorrow.
What a joy.
Yeah, what a joy.
And you're also actually on a... it's a double... I was going to say a double ender then. That was not what I wanted to say.
Wrong
a bonus. Double bonus. You're on TV... twice.
Well, I am indeed. And you see, I've had messages from people saying, will you please get off my TV? Because the right stuff's on at 9:15 in the morning for 2 hours. And it's a great show. I've done it for 15, 16 years now.
I can't believe it's been on that long.
Yeah, I think Matthew said this morning 16.
Blimey.
But I mean, I literally was a boy when I started. That's not quite true. And then I am now very excited to say that I'm one of the new presenters of Coast versus Country
yes.
on Channel 4. And that goes out at 4 o'clock. And I tell you, I've teamed up with my old Right Stuff friend, Kirsty Duffy,
uh-huh.
who sadly can't be here, sends her apologies.
It's quite all right.
But
we've got the best of the two, I'm just saying.
Kirsty, you're listening, because quite frankly, Coast wins. And I'll explain that show. So you can see that not only on Channel 4, obviously, but on 4OD and any other, you know, way of catching up yep. these days. But it's extraordinary. The reason I got that show was because I also have a great interest in property. And years and years ago when I was... Because I've had, like, the weirdest career ever. Obviously, I'm a medical doctor, you know.
It is, actually, now I think
yeah.
about it. Yeah.
yeah. Anyway.
Not much rhyme or reason between...
Well, I can tell you if you're interested. But,
of course.
Okay. But essentially, I have a great interest in property. And... I started doing this show thinking it was a property show, and essentially the premise is that a couple can't decide between coast or country, and so one of them really wants to live at the coast and one of them really wants to live at the country. And so what we do, we put into teams. So Kirsty shows three country properties, I show three coastal properties. There's a lot of sort of little gimmicks in between where we sneak up on each other, where we obviously there's a lot of banter. But then on the final day, and we hot house, we literally work for 16 hours a day with this poor couple, and then
they're exhausted by the end.
They're so keen to leave us. No, and at the end of it, they make an offer, and we've had the most incredible hit rate. We've had something like a 75-80% hit rate of people buying houses.
Wow.
And so what I was going to say about it was, I thought it was a property show, but it's not. It's that and a lot more, because essentially, it's an interpersonal dynamic show. It's about the couple. And when they are... And it's such an important purchase, a house. And it doesn't matter whether it's £150,000 you're spending or £500,000. This is the biggest purchase of your life.
Yeah.
It's very, very stressful.
Mm-hmm.
And you start to see their relationship unravel, what's important to them. And what we found extraordinary is that they say, oh, well, we want this sort of house. We don't want modern. We don't want this. We don't want that. They almost always buy something they say they don't want.
Really?
Almost always.
They've just overthought it, maybe, and they've...
I think also, fortunately, Kirsty's an ex-estate agent, has interest in property as well, and I've bought and sold a lot of houses over my life. And
you look exhausted by that.
You see, the thing is, I love it. And I have bought everything from complete wrecks in Benidorm, in Spain.
Gorgeous.
Which actually people are very rude about, but I do love a bit of Benidorm.
I think I would. I've never been, but I genuinely think that I would enjoy it if I went.
7 miles of sandy beach. It's the first ever. It's basically in a bay. It's got amazing weather all year round. I should work for the tourist board there. And but it was the
so
first,
from Benidorm.
But, so basically from there, all over the UK. And essentially, I've what was I going to say? Yeah, the amazing thing about that is that the journey that we go on with them is so intense that I really want to find them their perfect house. And so out of these shows, out of three of them, and we filmed 10, I cried in three of them because I was so thrilled for them. You know, they cried.
Well, that's nice that you feel that you're invested enough.
I'm totally invested in it. And, you know, so they've been sending us pictures. And actually, because the show's now going out, I'm getting pictures of them moving in, you know, with the dog and the... And it's extraordinary. So, for example, one of our first show, the stipulations are quite strict. You know, they need a garden for the one particular couple. Mandy and Keith needed a garden for their dog, Peggy. They needed enough space to park a motorhome and so on. And I was like, you could get rid of the motorhome, but this was a non-negotiable, right. You know. So it's been fantastic. I've absolutely loved it. And the beauty of it is we've been all over the United Kingdom. And I have to say, you know, the UK is beautiful.
It really is. And actually, I think it doesn't get not the respect, but you know what I mean, understanding that it... People are so localised, I think, sometimes. They never travel out of where they live.
Never. And you see, we did Devon and Cornwall, and then we went up into the Midlands, and we went further north, and then I went to East Anglia. I'm from Suffolk. I was born in Kent, but grew up in Suffolk. And we went to places like Lowestoft, where I hadn't been since I was a kid. I couldn't believe the transformation. And just miles of sandy beach. And I thought, well, why wouldn't you live here?
Yeah.
It's extraordinary.
So you're more of the coast fan?
I am all about the coast.
The rep of the coast.
No, I'm all about it.
So what? Why?
What I love about it, one of my flats was in Brighton, and that's a whole nother part of my career. But I think what the coast gives you, and the country is beautiful because that's where I grew up, but the coast for me gives you enormous freedom. Mm-hmm. You know, it doesn't matter how big your flat is, it could be tiny, but you go onto the beach and you have a vista for miles. Mm-hmm. You've got a sense of enormous openness. You can go running, which is what I like to do. You know, you'd see all these crazy people taking their dogs walking in the middle of the, you know, really early in the morning and so on. I don't know, there's a real connection with nature and the power and the force of the waves, the wind. And even in winter, it's incredibly exhilarating. And the summer, I mean, if you go to Brighton, for example, in the summer, it's amazing.
Yeah.
You know, people, everyone out drinking, having a wonderful time. You go there in the winter, Brighton's less amazing. But other parts of the coast, I would say, come into their element in the winter.
Yeah, definitely. Actually, where I grew up in Hampshire, I kind of grew up between Portsmouth and Southampton. It's a bit of a no man's land, apart from the gorgeous beach. No one goes there. It's
well, you see, you're
it's
lucky.
Unheard of. Yeah. And it was a lovely place to grow up. So I'm more of a coast fan, I think.
Well, you see, and the other thing is, because of the way we film this, we have to get up really early because we have to get those magnificent views before anyone interrupts the filming. So
excuse me, love.
You know, there is, and people taking their dogs for a walk. Yeah. We basically want these panoramic vistas of us setting up the story. You know, what's happening this week, and so on. So we are literally on camera at 7. Now, if you film in January at 7 a.m., the sun is only just starting to come up. I had 3 pairs of thermals on. The producer keeps saying, stop looking cold. I am cold. I'm freezing. But, you know, amazing to do.
And that's on Channel 4.
That's Channel 4 at 4 o'clock. My next episode goes out tomorrow at 4 o'clock. I think that's a really good one, I think. 4 o'clock. And you can catch it again on 4OD.
Great. Well, then we will.
Good.
I
hope you will, yes.
You were mentioning earlier, you had a little debate this morning on The Right Stuff. I was at work, so I didn't see it, about the political debate last night.
Well...
Me and Lissy were talking about this earlier. What did you make of it?
Well, what I said this morning was I said the biggest loser was the BBC. I thought it was the worst staged event I've ever seen in my life, and I used to work for them. Michelle Hussain had no control over those contributors. I thought it was worse than a student union slanging match. It just, for me, politics is all about informing the electorate, and it didn't do that. Mm. It just ended up being a shouting match. And we know from the callers that called in this morning that everyone said they either turned it off, they didn't feel any more informed. It doesn't matter what your political persuasion is, but the whole point about democracy is to listen to other people's points.
Yeah.
And to try to understand, or at least try to, you know, have a constructive argument, not shout at them. And that's why I just was very disappointed by that. I don't think the acoustics helped either.
That's actually a good point that my housemate brought up, funnily enough. He's a set designer and he was like, it sounds terrible.
Well, you see, I think the BBC got caught on the hop because I think they resourced it thinking the leaders were not coming.
Right.
When the leaders, or when Corbyn did his U-turn and said he would then appear, they suddenly thought, oh, crikey, we haven't actually invested quite as much or in the venue that we might have done.
So it was a hall, wasn't it?
Which is a very old, beautiful hall, but it is not a TV studio.
Yeah. I was actually saying earlier, I was very impressed with Caroline Lucas. I'm not a Green Party voter, but I was really impressed by the way she held herself and
I know Caroline because
Brighton, the Brighton connection.
Well done, yes, very good. I was wondering whether to hide it. I was the parliamentary candidate in Brighton against Caroline for the Conservative Party.
Okay.
So I know Caroline very well, and Caroline is incredibly erudite. She's very passionate, and she believes in what she believes in.
Mm-hmm.
And I agree with you. I thought she spoke extremely well last night, and she's a seasoned politician. Don't forget that. And she sat in the European Parliament. And the other person I thought was really good was Leanne Wood for Plaid Cymru.
Yeah.
I thought actually
she really stuck up for herself, didn't she? The way she really rebuffed Paul Nuttall when
yes, well, not only rebuffed him, but rebuffed Corbyn. And I just thought, actually, there were a lot of women. Good gender representation.
That,
actually,
exactly what I said. And I think it's sad that currently the two biggest left parties, the Lib Dems and Labour, haven't had a. And I'm a Liberal Democrat that have never had a female come forward to do that job.
No,
I wonder when that day will come.
Well, absolutely, and I still think it's extraordinary. We now have our second female Prime Minister, which is extraordinary in itself. I know Amber Rudd very well as well. Actually, there's a great story because when we were parliamentary candidates, I was sort of her entertainment. So when you're a candidate,
because she's not far from Brighton, isn't she?
Well,
Hastings.
She's Hastings and Rye, and so when it's awful being a candidate, I can't tell you. And we're going to talk about that on the Right Stuff tomorrow. But
okay.
You know, people have. You don't have to be horrible, but people spat at me and things like that.
Oh, God.
And the extraordinary thing is you go from being a TV presenter where everyone loves you, or at least you hope they do, and you go to do politics, and no one loves you. And that's quite an interesting dichotomy.
Yeah,
but so Amber asked me if I go and do a sort of after-lunch speech for her constituency, you know, to engender herself. This is before she became I think she was the parliamentary candidate at the time. And so I told some quite saucy jokes to some of the older ladies and gentlemen who were having lunch. Well, these went down terribly well, and she's now Home Secretary. And what am I doing? Oh, yes, that's right. I'm fiddling around on TV.
I think much more preferable to be on the TV, especially it's being spat on. I mean, that's that must have been really horrendous when it happened.
Horrific. I mean, just vile abuse. Even on Twitter today, people just post some really, really horrible stuff. And I've got some wonderful followers who I don't really need to reply because they will reply for me, which is so nice. And I have to say, by the way, just hello to Scott Greengrass, who keeps saying he's listening, and he's a massive fan. He wants to say that he's listening, and
would
just say hello
to
him.
Thanks for listening.
And, what
did you make of Theresa not turning up?
She made it very clear at the beginning that she wasn't going to turn up, and Corbyn said he wasn't going to turn up. Okay, so
that's a bit of a well-played game by Corbyn.
Yes,
he didn't give her any
time. Now, he then obviously changed his mind yesterday, and then I phoned a few people and said, she has to do it. Theresa May has to do it. But their response was that then it looks like she's changed her mind and been bounced into doing it. I half hoped and expected, and I was on the phone to a political journalist. Actually, I was on the phone to the editor of The Right Stuff at the time, saying I half expected her to be there, but without telling anyone. Which would have been,
and then just turn up.
Yes, with a big cloak. That would have been, you know, that would have been a masterpiece of theatre. In the end, so I was upset she wasn't there, because I think, you know, if you're doing a leader's debate, which it wasn't, but it now turned into one, you need the Prime Minister, because she's the most important leader, because she's leading the government. But I also felt very strongly that at the end of that shambolic thing last night, I thought actually Amber did an amazing job. If you consider she's not been in politics that long, she was promoted very quickly to Home Secretary. I know what it's like to do a lot of public speaking and to be heckled. And I thought she did a great job. And actually, maybe Theresa May did do a very good job not turning up, because I don't think that's her forte.
Yeah, definitely.
Well, it's not.
No.
But then, you know, it depends. Are we voting for a president or are we voting for a party?
And that's part of the difficulty, isn't it? I mean, I'm very pro-electoral reform. I just still don't know if I'd want to vote for one candidate. It seems, it's an odd thing.
But you see, our democracy is not presidential, although the papers and the media are making it more and more presidential. And if you noticed, even the Conservative Party, it was a very interesting change of tactic because it was all branded Theresa May and her team. But it's not. It's people who are elected, who become ministers, and there is a major minister who is the prime minister.
Yeah.
And that's the way our democracy works.
Yeah, and I think that's actually lost on most people, I would think.
I know, and that's the sadness for me. And also, I think in the advent of X Factor and all these other competition shows, you know, which is very much about rooting for people and, you know, name-calling, you know, going after your particular candidate, it's become more presidential. And I think also politics... I think, you know, I have many friends from many different political parties. We have the most fantastic arguments in pubs over a lot of beer. And the best arguments are when you agree to disagree.
Yeah.
But you don't have to fight each other, you know. That's the point. And I think about consensus politics because, you know, Labour has some very good policies, which I think the Tories should adopt. I think equally the Lib Dems have good policies. And that's what good politics should be about,
actually. And it's very bad in America at the minute, but it's equally as bad here. There is no cross-party...
No.
Well, I don't know what the term is.
Well, consensus at all.
Yeah.
And this is the problem. And this goes on to one of my biggest bugbears, which is the NHS, which obviously I'm a doctor by training. And actually, the thing that I would do, and if I had gone into government and if I ever did one day go back in, the first thing I would do is take the NHS out of the political arena. I would depoliticise the whole thing because... all it does at the moment is gets kicked from one side to the other side, then the next side. There's no strategic plan. It needs a 20-year strategic plan away from members of parliament, responsible to someone, whether that's the Queen or a head, you know, the head of, head of state. Mm-hmm. I don't know who it is, but it has to be depoliticised because otherwise you end up with really rubbish short-term strategies. It's all about fiscal years, not funding drugs properly, you know. And at the end of the day, as a doctor, I want people to get the best healthcare they possibly can.
Yeah. I do not. I could talk to you all evening, but unfortunately, we have two other guests to get on and some chat to do. So, thank you so much for coming in.
Well, thank you very much indeed. And now, Right Stuff. Don't forget tomorrow morning, 9:15, and then Coast versus Country at 4, and then you'll need a drink after all that.
I wish I could watch the Right Stuff. It's just when I have my first news meeting of the day, so I'm otherwise
engaged.
You
can watch on catch up.
I shall do.
Yes.
Thank you very much for coming in.
Thank you.
Radio presents
Joey Page.
When was the last time you were in hospital?
The nurse.
God, when was it? Was it when I had the old testy surgery?
Maybe. Did she have a little world route around in Simon's sack?
Yeah.
Yeah?
Shall I remember when I went back in for, like, to check my old testes after my testy surgery? I remember going in, it's obviously a long time ago, like 20 years pretty much. I remember going in, there was a very attractive nurse in there, and I'd be like, hi, I'm here to have a look at my twisted up ball sack again.
Every Wednesday,
Joey Page.
From 2 p.m.
FUBAR Radio.
You were the life and the soul, every party that we used to go. Baby, all of the dance floors you touched, you could turn them into gold. Thousands of stars in the night were jealous you could shine so bright. Now I'm missing your laugh and your glow, won't rest until you let me know. So baby, change your mind, leave that broken heart behind, 'cause the night young, so let it bring you back to life. Rock loud and dance with me. If you're down, it's a remedy. 'Cause all we need is me and you in neon blue.
Come as you are, you're great, and you don't need to change a thing.
All your tears and your troubles can wait, and we don't need to let them.
Having a jam-packed show today because we already have our third guest on the phone. It doesn't usually happen like this, one straight after
quick
the other.
Fire.
This is very exciting. Misha Paris, are you there?
Yeah.
How are you?
I'm good.
Are you good? Are you enjoying this beautiful weather we're having at the minute?
Yeah, I'm literally loving it. I mean, I just got back from LA, so it's like I'm getting both sides, like heat there, heat here. It's great.
We just had our first guest who came in this evening. He'd also just come from LA, but he was saying June is actually quite a bad month for it to be in LA. You get
well, but you know what? It's interesting you say that. It's true, but it's absolutely boiling at the moment. It was boiling there, and then I got here, and it was boiling here, and it's like, oh.
What geez. A treat. Oh. What a treat you're having. And it's set to be a little bit of a busy time for you. You're going to be performing at the Cheltenham yeah. Jazz Festival. That's very exciting.
Yeah, we did it already. It was fantastic. It was great. And Now I'm going to do the Love Supreme Festival. That's the next one.
Got it.
That's on the 1st of July.
Right.
And that's a really good festival as well. It's just incredible. You know, you've got Gregory Porter. Everyone will be there. It'll be fantastic. It's great.
And you are celebrating the fabulous, one of my favourites, Ella Fitzgerald. Is that right?
Yeah, well, it's her centenary. And, you know,
I had no idea. I mean, that is absolutely crazy.
Oh, Stephen, that's bad.
I know. Terrible.
It's all right. No, it's okay. What's interesting to me, it's like, we've all known everything she's ever done in our lives, but we haven't really put it to her. It's interesting. She's in everyone's life. You've heard her songs all over the place.
Yeah, 100%.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And it's adverts, whatever. You know, she's been everywhere. And you kind of, a lot of people don't realise it's her.
Yeah, do you think...
They know the songs and they go, oh, that's Ella. Oh, it's like that, you know.
Why do you think that is? It's like she's omnipresent almost.
Yeah.
But do you think it's
so
because her heyday was a while ago? Do you think that kind of like the youth of today probably don't know it so well?
I don't know if it's so much that. I think it's like, you know, like you've got like a backdrop to your life and it's always sort of been there. It's a bit like baked beans. It's always been there, hasn't it? You know
Ella Fitzgerald, baked beans.
You know what I mean? In terms of like, you just get used to it because it's always there. You don't make a big deal of it. Or Coca-Cola, whatever.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
It's always there. She's like that. You'd be walking down the road and you hear a song. You'll hear like every time we say goodbye or something like that on the radio. Or something with her and Louis Armstrong, and you've heard it. Look, Dream a Little Dream.
Yeah,
how many times have you heard that song? We've heard it loads. You've heard it on advert, and you just overlook it because you're used to it.
Yeah,
and that's what's happened to her. She's there all the time, but a lot of people miss it. And it's not until you say that's Ella, they go, oh,
oh, you've heard that one. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, like she's like that. Yeah.
What is it you like about her so much?
Well, I love her because she's ubiquitous. You know, she was able to do so many different styles. And people kind of know me for being a bit nuts like that. I always
no.
do lots of different things. I'm just silly because I try my hand at anything. And if I'm a real, you know, if I'm really crap at it, you know, I don't do it again. But I'll try anything once. And she was like that. You know, she did rock and roll. You know, she did jazz. But she always brought Ella to whatever she did, and that's why she was fabulous. I mean, she even did the Beatles. You know, she would cover people's songs, but always make it her own. I love that about her. I thought she was amazing. And because, you know, we always credit her as being the queen of scat. You know, she was the one that was good. You know, she was always doing that. And then everybody started doing it, but she was the queen of that.
Yeah.
And,
It was a really interesting kind of time in music when she was big, wasn't it? When she was at her peak. Are there any other people from that time that you're really inspired by?
Well, she was. I mean, the thing is, I'm still quite young in terms of what, you know, how old she was.
Of course, yeah.
But in terms of when I was a kid, no, it's just when I was a kid in the 70s, the advert that was on the TV was Memorex, and she was. She was in the advert, and they said that it's not live, it's Memorex. And then she'd sing and break the glass. And I was 8 years old, and I remember that advert, and I remember saying to my grandparents, who's that lady who broke the glass? And they said, that's Ella Fitzgerald. And I was like, I want to be like her, and I'm 8 years old. You know what I mean?
So
Ella has been a fixture for me for many, many, many years. But I love her versatility more than anything. And I love her also because her voice, she was able to not just sing like just so soft and beautiful and like silk. She could also belt as well. So she could go from belting to smooth. And she was just versatile. I love that.
And you've obviously had an incredible career of your own. And I was reading up about the work you did with Prince. What was he like to work with?
He's great. I mean, I knew him, you know, most of my career because he came in right at the beginning. Basically, I went to see his concert, a private concert, and he put me on stage to sing. Still to this day, all the time I was talking and meeting him and stuff, I never ever asked him, how did you know who I was? Because I hadn't released a single yet. But, you know, you just don't get, you know people for 30 years and you don't really get around to asking them things like that. Because you see each other over the years after that for like, maybe like an hour.
Yeah.
And you're just talking about other stuff. You never actually get to go there. So, unfortunately, I'll never know. And I saw him the last time, the year before he died. he was in London doing a show in Camden again, so I felt like we'd come full circle. But I you know, he asked me to join the band after putting me on stage to sing with him. And I said I couldn't join the band because I just signed to Island Records. I was only 18.
God.
And so he said, come to Minneapolis. I flew to Minneapolis, and then he wrote
That's
me...
That's so crazy, just to, like, just, okay, I'm going, Minneapolis.
Yeah, and it was amazing. Went to Paisley Park, and he wrote me this song, and then he started playing me all the songs from the vault, you know, this... And what do? You're sat there. He's got Coffee and Cream there, you know, the two girls that used to be in his videos as his minders.
Oh, yeah.
And then they're coming at 4 a.m, and then he's like, do you want to hear songs from the vault? I'm like, yeah. You
know what I mean? Yeah, all right. So go on then.
He puts it on, and do you know, what do? Every song he plays is insane. He's just literally going, oh, man, that's so good. Okay, do you want to hear this one? Yeah. Oh, man, that's not good. And then he played again. Oh, what? That is just... And it was like that the whole night. I mean, this all started at 4 a.m, by the way.
Oh,
and went on all the way. This is what he was like.
Yeah, you hear that a lot about the greats, isn't it? Time really makes no difference to them, does it? You know, they're up all night, and then they're up all day, or, you know, whatever. It's just the way
they work. He was exceptional, because I think the thing with him, what I got from him all the time, was he couldn't switch it off.
Mm-hmm.
He constantly heard music in his head the whole time. It was kind of a curse in a way.
Yeah.
He always heard music all the time. This was someone who was writing all the time.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, it was insane.
You must have been very sad when you heard about his passing.
I was in absolute shock. I can't even tell you, because literally I saw him a year before.
Yeah.
I don't think it was fully a year, actually, because I'd seen him like June before, mm-hmm. and he died in April. So mm-hmm. it was like, I couldn't believe, I did think he looked a bit thin when I saw him the last time. I thought, he looks really thin.
But he was always a slight guy, wasn't he? He was always a...
He was muscular.
Right, right.
He was very muscular. He was a bit like a Bruce Lee type. He was very cut.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
He was very muscular, but small, yeah?
Yeah.
But he was different. He was gaunt when I saw him the last time. And I thought, he doesn't look so good. But I just thought, you know, because I know he's a workaholic.
Yeah.
I didn't make big of it. I just thought, he looks a bit thin.
Yeah.
But I thought, you know, he's probably knackered because he's always working too much. Didn't realise, you know?
And he was, really, wasn't he? He was releasing music and performing very much up until the end.
That's what people have to understand what it's like to be a musician, you know? It's not a day job, you know? Literally, it's you, you know? You live it all the time. It's part of your life, you know? You don't put it down and sit down and go and do something else. It's you, you know? Mm. So for me, like I always say to people, you've got to remember that, you know, when these greats go, it's always wonderful that they go doing what they love, because that's how they'd want to go.
Yeah.
You know, they'd want to go doing their music. That's how you do it, you know.
It's such a sad story, I think with him and what's happened. And with so many artists, it seems like
they're always on their own. That's the thing I always can't bear, is that they're always by themselves when they leave us. And you kind of worry about that, and you sort of say, well, you know, someone who had zillions of fans around the world and people just loving him, and he was by himself, the poor thing. And that's the thing that hurts more than anything. No one should be on their own, you know. Michael Jackson was the same. He was on his own.
Yeah.
Johnson left him on his own, you know. Elvis, he was on his own. Whitney, she was on her own. Like, where are the people? Where are they? Where are the caretakers?
Do you think that
Amy Winehouse, she was on her own. I mean, like, gosh.
Is that something to do with the huge levels of fame they have? They don't trust people, do you think, sometimes?
Well, it's funny because I'm writing a book about that at the moment, but mostly about female singers from the past. It's interesting. I do think it's got a lot to do with, not so much trust, it's more to do with that whole thing of you might be publicly accessible, but once the show is over, you've got to go home, right?
Yeah.
And as time goes on, there's less and less fans.
Yeah.
You come home with you.
Mm-hmm.
You see what I mean? And you know, it's that whole thing of, you know, you lose people along the way. I always say to people, you know, you start off in life, the bus is filled with people, and by the time you get old... You're the only one on the bus, you know what I mean?
that's sad. That makes me feel sad. I remember watching one of Madonna's documentaries once, and she'd just got off stage. I think it was like the Girly Tour or something. And she came off stage and she was like, well, where is everyone? There was just a camera person. And, you know, she... you're so high, you've done this massive performance.
Oh, it's like that every time you do a performance. Honestly, the adrenaline is shocking.
Really?
And this is why a lot of artists end up going on drugs, because it's so calm down after you've been on stage. I can't even tell you.
Like, yeah, bad.
You literally have to learn how to. For me, I literally take about 45 minutes. I have to just stay still and just chill out until it passes, because you are buzzing, like your whole
body.
Yeah,
I bet.
And he's like, okay, let's just wait for everything to go down.
it's so odd.
And then you can go back to normal, you know, and you try to explain it to people and they just think you're completely nuts.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah, I bet.
It's an energy. It's something that happens. It's the interaction between you giving out, audience giving back, you giving back to them. It creates this energy within you that you just feel like you're going to explode.
Yeah, I bet.
And it's very hard to explain it to people. I mean, the only thing I could probably say that's closest to that is, like, maybe when you're on one of those rides, those roller coasters where, you know, you're going so fast and then you go upside down and twist around and you come off and you're a bit like dazed when you come off. You're like, yeah. It's a bit like that.
Yeah, but at least that doesn't happen, you know, it doesn't last, you know, 30 minutes or whatever. You want your off, you're off, you know.
Yeah, but you want to do it again, don't you?
That's true. Good point.
Yeah.
So you said the next gig was on July the 1st, did you say?
Yeah, this is Love Supreme, and it's a fantastic festival. Like, you know, real proper music, proper artists, you know, beautiful,
and where is that?
Beautiful music. And I think it's in Brighton.
Okay.
I think it's up that way. You really shouldn't ask me. I'm shocking when
just
it comes
turn
to
up.
Honestly, the driver takes me.
You're
I'm
a star,
so
baby. You're a star.
No, I'm not a star. I've just got terrible direction. If it's not West London, I don't know where I'm going. Sorry.
Fair enough, Bez. That's fine. Well, I guess there's.
I know
a
where the airport is. I know where Heathrow and Gatwick. I'm really good there.
Well, that's good. You can make your way from Terminal 1 to Terminal 2 or whatever. That's good. Well, thank you so much for speaking to us, and
yes.
We'll make sure to check it out.
Love Supreme, darling.
Yeah, well, I'll find out where it is first, and then.
Yeah, I know, baby. God bless you, you poor thing. And basically, and, you know, I'll be singing all of Ella Fitzgerald's my new single, which is "Imagine My Frustration."
Right.
And it with the Guy Barker Orchestra. I mean, I hope you play it. Have you guys got it?
We've got "Every Time We Say Goodbye" ready to play.
Oh, yeah, that's good too.
Good, but, phew, you know, I'm glad you said that.
Yeah, no, it's good too. But Imagine My Frustration is also really good too. They're both
amazing. We'll get it on the playlist for next week.
Love you, darling. Thank
Great,
you so
thank you so much,
much
for speaking to us.
To you all.
Cheers.
Thank you, darling. Bye.
Access All Areas with Stephen Lang on FUBAR Radio.
Song takes me back, I tell you.
To before I was born.
Was it before? Please don't tell me that.
I'm not sure. What year was it?
I'm not entirely sure of the year, but I remember my mum being at university at the time.
Goodness me.
She wasn't like, she didn't have me when she was 12 or something. She went as an adult, just to clarify. But I do love that song.
What's it called again?
Cranberries.
I know it's the Cranberries.
Oh, Dreams.
Dreams. Okay, one sec. Getting the old Google up. Well, Google says it was released in 1993, and I am a 92 baby. So you're welcome.
That kills me. I was 7. No, actually, I was 8. So, you know.
Storming through junior school.
I'm really, listening to the Crabbies. That's very cool. We have our final guest of the evening on the line right now. Suzanne Shaw, are you there?
Yes, and I was 11 when that was released.
Okay, so
I
you
feel
win.
Really old.
You
now.
Win.
I
Sorry,
win.
Suzanne.
I top jumped you on that one.
How are you?
Yeah, I'm great, thank you. How are you?
Really good. Sorry we don't have Lizzie here this evening. We've just got Lissy instead.
Yeah.
The producer of the show. Who's
Oh great.
You
sir.
Know, you're much younger than both the presenters of the show, which is quite disappointing, but there you go.
Sorry guys. Sorry everyone.
How have you been?
Yeah, I'm good. I'm great, thank you. I've been really, really well. Very busy on the school holidays with the kids.
Oh lovely.
Keeping
oh,
me running around.
It?
Yeah, half term. Mm-hmm. Half term. I can't wait for them to go back.
Only a couple more days, right?
Yeah, on countdown as well.
Why is that? But you look forward to it so much and then the reality is just always very different, isn't it?
Well, it's just, you know, I've got a 12-year-old son who is just basically has all his friends around all the time.
Oh,
so
God.
It just becomes like an open house. It's like a youth club at the moment. So.
You've got to keep the fridge constantly stocked.
I know. Oh, my God. We've been through so much squash. We've been through, like, litres of it and tomato ketchup. I thought, oh, God.
This
like,
is the problems you never anticipate as a
I know,
when you
the reality.
Pre-parent.
Yeah. I know. Note to self, always have juice and tomato ketchup in.
Done.
Done.
You are here to talk to us about this amazing initiative by Oxfam, aren't you? Dressed by the Kids Day.
Yes,
speaking of children.
I am. Yes, speaking of children. It's been a really, really great campaign. And, yeah, very, very thrilled to be involved in it. And just to give you a breakdown of it all, really.
Yeah, please go ahead and explain it to us.
Yeah, so basically Oxfam are getting people to sign up. So if you can go to oxfam.org.uk/silly, and you can get a pack which is basically dressing your kids up to give poverty a dressing down. So it's all about family fun and also educating your children exactly what this is about. So not only can you have a load of fun, you can also say the reason we are doing this is because, you know, there's so much poverty all over the world. And we by signing up and, you know, and getting involved, you're making a difference and raising awareness.
So, yeah, so what exactly do you do? Because there's a specific day, isn't there? The 16th of June.
What happens
on that day?
So that's the day to get all dressed up by the kids, do silly things. You know, in this pack, there's stickers, there's, like, little monkey faces. There's all sorts of different things that you can do. But, yeah, I think for me, having boys, you know, they haven't dressed me up like a princess or anything nice. No, what
Even
they
ogre.
Did is dress... Yeah, no, I was dressed up in my partner's underpants. And,
oh my God, that's so embarrassing.
I know, it's so embarrassing. It's so when I went to do the photo shoot, it was like, oh, so what have you got? And you had Gabby Logan there, and she was like dressed really cool with her teenage daughter, was like gave a real fashion look. And then other mums were coming in as princesses, and I was going, oh, that's so beautiful. I come in looking like Captain Underpants.
I think you're wearing something else other than just underpants.
No, yes, I was.
Yes, this isn't X-rated, is it?
Yeah, no, not at all. I also had a tie on, my partner's tie, my partner's... Basically, I was just wearing my partner's clothes for the day, and well, then my son's baseball cap.
Oh, lovely. Well, you're really you're really selling it to me, I have to say. It sounds like a strong look for you, Suzanne.
I know, but it was just so much fun. I mean, as Corey, my eldest, is dressing me up as I was leaving the house, I've got a 20-month-old, and he's obsessed with caps. But he has to do this thing where he puts the cap on, and then he takes it off and he puts it on your head. And as I was leaving to do the shoot, that was his little token thing, and put this cap on me, and I thought, I've got to go with that as
That's
well.
That's really cute. I like that.
Yeah. So, but it's such a fun campaign. It's such a great thing to do with the family. You know, gets the whole family involved. And it is funny. I mean, you know, you can dress up the dad. I mean, I suggest you dress your dad up in, like, you know,
your mum's clothes.
Dresses. Yeah, exactly.
If they fit. You don't want it lots of stretched and ripped clothes.
I know. Yeah. That was my miniskirt you've just ripped. Yeah.
I have been noted on the occasional high heel if I can find one that fits. So,
oh, really?
You know, now and again.
Okay. Yeah. Into Rocky Horror Show by any chance.
Yeah, totally. That exactly that vibe. So what else have you been up to recently? I know you've obviously been spending a lot of time with your kids and being a mum, haven't you?
Yeah. Yeah, because Raffi is still little. So this time I was really taking my time to get back out there. And it's been really nice to be able to be at home and to spend a lot more time with the kids. Because when I had Corey, I was back to work like 7 weeks after he was born, going into a musical. So I did a musical last year, and then I went into Panto, so just small little gigs. And I've just been working on a few projects at the moment, which are exciting. One of them is a writing project that I've been doing. Yeah, so all exciting, but nothing to really tell because nothing's kind of delivered.
Yeah, that's fine. Yeah, I totally understand. Yeah. I have to say, when I saw you were coming onto the show, I was incredibly excited, and I don't want to fanboy. But when Hearsay came out back in the day, that was the peak of actually. I'm a full time celebrity journalist, and that was one of the first things that ever got me into celebrity.
Oh really?
Yeah, because
at the age of what, like 13?
No,
14,
yeah, I must have been about 13, 14.
Really?
I'm trying to think. I was born '85. Was it 2001? Was it 2001 Hearsay?
Yes, it was, yeah.
So I would have been... Oh, no, I would have been 16. So that was when I was looking at stuff I wanted to do. And I remember watching watching Pop Stars and just kind of and getting the whole... It was just... I found it just incredible. The way it was... And you saw it for the first time, how it worked. And,
yeah,
you know,
yeah.
And how everything was thrown together. How do you look back at that time in your life?
Oh, really fond memories. I mean, it was crazy. It was a crazy, crazy time. And, you know, it was a whirlwind, and it all happened so, so quickly. I mean, we were working very, very long hours. We very rarely had any time off. So it didn't any of it sink in until after it all happened. So, yeah, it was reflecting back on it. You know, you do look with it with fond memories. And, you know, like Corey's now understanding that I used to be in a pop band, and
embarrassed or is he happy?
Well, now he does this thing. I mean, he started it the other day, and it scared the living crap out of me. I was sat in my kitchen, and he can link himself up to the TV with his phone.
Oh yeah!
And suddenly, Pure and Simple just started to play, and I was like, "What is this? The Ghost of Pop Stars? I mean, what's happening here?" And I hadn't realised he'd managed to do that. So I'm freaking out in the kitchen going, why is that? Come on, is this a sign? I mean, what is it? What's happening to me? And then I heard him sniggering with his mates in the other room. I was like, oh, right, I get it.
You're officially an old mum. That's what
yes.
it is.
Yes.
Don't understand this modern technology. What is happening?
No idea. No idea about it. But yeah, but I do look at it on fond memories. And
but it wasn't easy for you all, was it? Because this was the first time this had happened in kind of an internet age, and when things were slightly different to how they'd been before.
Yeah.
Is that sometimes difficult as well? Because, you know, people want to drag up things that were said and done at the time. And
yeah, a lot of the time they do. I mean, I think that's kind of... It's certainly gone now, but everybody was learning, from the record company to the management to, you know, obviously us guys, with it being, you know, being thrown into the limelight very, very suddenly. It was a learning curve for everybody, and I think it was just kind of seeing exactly how this new way of TV and music world, it works. And now, obviously, it's a very well thought, running, successful ship, you know, with X Factor and even Britain's Got Talent. You know, it's all done so well.
You say that, but interestingly, the people that are on it do not get to the kind of meteoric success that you guys did now that they used to. Why do you think that is?
Yeah, I think they do, but it's few and far between, because you do have like Little Mix and One Direction.
That's
but
true, yeah.
It's very, very few and far between. And I think, you know, because there's so many of them, and it's churned out, you know, I can't even remember who won X Factor last year. You know, you kind of forget as soon as like the next show comes on. And then
I'm actually drawing a blank. I actually can't think
no,
of who it was.
I know. I do that every year because I think there's so many of them.
Yeah.
And it's a very quick turnaround. So it's not until if the music works, and that's when they become a success, and it's not necessarily the TV show.
Yeah, that's true.
Obviously, that kind of gives them the profile, but it's the music definitely speaks and will always speak, you know, regardless of what kind of exposure you've got.
Yeah. You obviously did a little bit of reality TV as well. You did Dancing on Ice, isn't that right?
Yes, yeah, and that's coming back next year.
Yeah, so I've heard. What do you make of that?
I think it's brilliant. I think, you know, networks are really quick to kind of act something if it suddenly drops in viewing figures. And, you know, still the last Dancing on Ice is still, like, getting 5-6 million viewing figures, which is a great hit.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, we kind of realised that you know, even if it did drop in viewing figures, it was still a hit show for ITV. So I think, you know, they wanted it back, and it was popular and it was great. And, you know, it's a massive challenge for somebody to take on something, to learn something new like that. So it's
and
always interesting watch.
The ice, on the ice.
Terrifying,
Oof, terrifying. Would you do any other of those big shows? So are you still bothered about doing those sorts of things?
I mean, I never say never. I think, you know, this way of the way the TV world is now, it's, you know, certainly something that it demands our TV. So in terms of the fact that my job is to be on TV, there's not many options, to be honest.
True.
So who knows?
Okay. Celebrity Big Brother. That's what I want to see.
I know. No, I can't. I think I draw the line at that. I just, you know.
It's not good for your mental
health.
It's
hard enough to find the right partner to live with, let alone loads of bonkers people in one house. You know, it's a crazy one, that. No, it's not for me. That's certainly something.
Good to know.
You know, I've said no to.
All right, cool. Yeah. Well, thank you so much for speaking to us this evening.
Thank you. Thanks for having us on, guys.
The campaign is hashtag dressed by the kids. Dressed by the Kids Day, and it is on the 16th of June. So I guess all the information you need will be on the Oxfam website.
Yeah, that's right. That's absolutely right. Brilliant.
Great. Cool. Well, so thanks so much again. And good luck with the campaign and your projects you're working on.
Cheers. Thanks so much.
Bye.
Bye.
Machine when I do it. I'll be catching fire, gasoline when I do it. Just cause you're packing loop down sound. That don't mean I'm ever gonna take it live now, baby. You're the man. But I got the power. You make rain. But I make it shower. You should know. I'm the one who's in control. I let you go to the wind.
Hold up. My turn. I make this look easy. Hit it boom like gasoline. If they call me Lamborghini, cause I know just what I'm worth. Flip the door over 100, but my body make them stutter. Stop my engine, push the button, hit them, don't be coming first. Yeah, I'm a machine when I do it. I'll be catching fire, gasoline when I do it.
And tell you power's for a king, huh? You just play it cool and tell them power's not a thing. What? You look them in the eye and say, I know I'm not a guy, but see, there's power in my losses and there's power in my wins. Independent woman looking shower in your bims. They call me Coco, but I'm Mike, you can't be powder in my skin. And you don't need to spend another hour in the gym. You know I'm blinded by his grace, but when you found me, I was dim. We'll be counting down the years, yeah, I'm about this. All them dirty secrets that we share, I'll clear the browsers. We the type to build on our careers and share the houses. You can be a woman and then a boss and wear the trousers at the same time. That I ain't never letting go. But as long as I'm alive, then I'll be sponsoring your pride. You know there's power in the couple. Let me compliment your vibe, girl.
I'm
haven't heard that before, and I'm well into it. Little Mix and Stormzy. Stormzy. Don't sound like a right dickhead when I say things like that.
Yeah, you sound very white.
So depressing. You just told me a bit of showbiz gossip I didn't know.
I know, which is always a shock.
I know.
When I've got
I know it all.
Celebrity news. Well, no, I was just on the phone to my aunt earlier.
I mean, an unexpected source for celebrity showbiz gossip.
No, she's great. She knows everything. And she was banging on about Taylor Swift. And I was like, oh, yeah. And she was like, no, it's old news, darling. Apparently, Taylor Swift's got a British boyfriend.
Right.
He's
another
an
after
actor.
Harry.
Well, and after Calvin and Tom Hiddle, what's it?
Oh, yeah, she really does love a Brit, doesn't she?
She does.
So does Katy Perry.
Yeah,
what's
well,
going on there?
Maybe that's the source of their
rivalry. Yeah, good point.
The gossip is that apparently she's moving to Crouch End.
I mean, of all the places to move to.
I mean, it's blooming lovely.
I mean, it's lovely. But there are nicer areas of London.
Have you
if you've got money.
No, I know. And I saw it in like a little local newspaper. So it's probably the biggest thing that's happened to them in a while.
So wait, is this actually happening, do you think?
Oh, it's rumoured in the Hampstead and Highgate Gazette.
Where are their sources from? That's what I want to know.
Well, I don't know, but isn't that Justin Bieber's stomping ground? He's got a house up there.
What the fuck is going on? I did not know that it was such a...
What can I say?
I was going to say Hampstead is a hotbed of activity, but for different reasons.
Yes.
George Michael. Yeah, interesting.
Exactly. So maybe me and Taylor Swift will be neighbours.
I mean, I bet she's an absolutely dreadful neighbour.
Oh, I
bet she grows those big tall Leylandii trees, you know, that really do, they really fuck up people's houses and the, no, I'm not, no.
I bet she's awful at, you know, a barbecue. I bet they stay, her guests stay far later than
far
you want them to.
Too late.
On a Sunday evening when you're just trying to get an early night.
Their music is far too bloody loud.
Too bloody loud.
And she's, I actually really detest Taylor Swift.
And all those cats, I bet they poo
oh,
everywhere.
She's such a cat lady. What? Get her off.
Get her off.
Get her out of Crouch End. I say move her somewhere like Alcatraz where she can't bother anyone.
Goodness, that's rather strong.
I'm just not a fan. I really, really dislike her and what she's about.
Where's that come from?
It was when she did that video with all of the... good idea, the moon. It was when she did that video with all of those people.
Bad blood.
Yeah. Mm. And it was all like, oh, I know Ellie Goulding. And like, oh, how fab is Lena Dunham? She's a bit fat. Like, I just found it a bit like patronising and like... And there, and then she did a tour where they did this whole montage about how much they love her and how adorable Taylor Swift is and blah, blah. Like, you're a frigging narcissist, woman. You are a narcissist.
Interesting. So it's just a
I'm a team Katy Perry.
Are you?
Team Katy Perry all the way.
See, I think Katy Perry's fab, but I've never really had to been of the opinion that I have to pick.
True. And neither have I, really. I mean, let's put this in perspective. It's really not that important. I do not know Taylor Swift. I'm sure she's a lovely girl.
Katy Perry's new hair. Thoughts?
Looks like Miley Cyrus.
It does a bit, doesn't
well,
it?
Well, old Miley Cyrus. Mm. I don't know. Like, maybe like a 7 out of 10. Could do better.
Huh. I really liked it. But then I think Katy Perry is absolutely stunning. I think she can't really do any wrong.
I agree with you on that, actually. Once my ex-boyfriend cried when he saw a picture of Katy Perry because he thought she was so pretty, and that is not a lie. I am telling the truth. Oliver Hancock, you know it to be true.
And is that the reason that you and Oliver Hancock are no longer together?
No, there are other reasons. Shall we wrap up the show? Lissy, well done.
Oh, thank you. I'll get back to producing next week.
I think you've been fab. You don't need to worry about it. Let's get rid of Lizzie and have Lissy.
Woo, Team Lissy.
But for now, should we play a bit of Hearsay?
Very
simple to sign off the show.
Thank you, Suzanne. We loved you.
Thanks for listening, everyone. And tune in next week where Lizzie will probably be back, but who knows?
You've been saying I'm driving you crazy, and I haven't been around for you lately, but I had a few things on. When I'm with you, I am filled with emotion. Can't you see that I'm giving you devotion? And a love like this is hard to find.
worst weather. Always trying to make